Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And that's how it all begins. A divine summons to leave home for the promise of a new home. I read that summons to Abram with deeply mixed feelings. On one hand, there's something admirable, courageous, an epic about the summons, the voice with very few words commanding Abram to uproot. How do we read this? Is Abram and his God to be admired or feared? Emulated or despised? Is there any sense of reality to this summons? Is Abram truly special and exceptional? Or is it clever justification for conquest after the fact? As we know, to this very day, the land the Lord showed Abram was and is already inhabited. The summons to Abram doesn't end with Abram. Abram is the father, the patriarch of those who've been summoned throughout history to leave home and following what they feel is a divine summons to search out a new home. Aboard the Arabella in the year 1630, Puritan preacher John Winthrop quoted Deuteronomy in his sermon, A Model of Christian Charity, and to his fellow Puritans as they approached what they called the New World, Winthrop exhorted his people not to be seduced by our pleasures and profits and serve them, but to love the Lord our God and to love one another and to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments, that we may live and be multiplied and that the Lord our God may bless us in the land whether we go to possess it. Possess it. That's the key. Possess the land in the name of our God, in the name of a special, unique, exceptional, divine calling. A calling to be a blessing, to be sure, the story goes. God tells Abram, I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Was there a reality to the summons? Is there a reality in this universe that justifies a special people to possess and to be the vehicle for divine blessing? That is the legacy of monotheism. Possess and bless in the name of the Lord's voice. People may wonder if the Bible is relevant. Native peoples everywhere know that answer. The Bible is terrifyingly relevant. White folks come with their Bible and their divine summons to possess the planet. Enslavement, lynching, and genocide are the blessing. The mythos of the United States cannot be appreciated without this manifest destiny, a divine exceptionalism, the calling of God to possess and supposedly bless. And it isn't just the modern nations of Israel and the United States, two peas in a pod, who think of themselves as divinely ordained to bless the world. Empires come and go. Different ages and people have incarnated the message to leave home and find a new home to be a blessing to the world, all in different ways. But these two little blips on the cosmic movie screen are merely the current versions of a delusion. In time, the words of Jesus will come true again for Israel and the United States. Not one stone will be left upon another. All will be torn down. That is the reality of impermanence. Nothing is more real than change. And the reality is so terrifying that we spend nearly every moment and every ounce of our energy denying it. Think of all of the ways that we deny the reality of impermanence. We even think that thinking about it is depressing. Those who pointed out, the teachers of wisdom who dared to speak some truth about our existence, were vilified, crucified, and forced to drink the hemlock. But had we listened, were we to accept the reality of impermanence, we would find moksha, salvation, shalom. Here's the irony. The Hebrew people never really get to the promised land. The Torah is read in the synagogue once per week, and it's completed every year. It begins with Genesis, ends with Deuteronomy. The people are right on the edge of the land, ready to go in, and then the year ends and they start all over again, Genesis. The Tanakh, that is the Hebrew Scriptures, ends with 1 Chronicles, with the wistful words, "Let us go up. Let us go up to Jerusalem." It's out of reach. Now, for a while, we find in the Bible that they hang out in the Promised Land, the golden age of David and Solomon, but they lose it. And even as they have it, it's never peaceful. The possession is never complete and always precarious. The Bible and monotheism in general is a fiction. It posits a beginning to the universe and an ending. Garden to Jerusalem, or for Christians, garden to the New Jerusalem that comes out of the heavens. Islam is similar, garden to paradise. Now, the first part of the summons to Abram, I think, is true. Leave your home and your kindred. But the second part never happens. Yahweh holds out the carrot, but never delivers. There's no there there. The promised land does not have a latitude or a longitude. There's no space in space for the New Jerusalem. The only thing that's real is the wandering itself. Jesus is reported to have said, "Foxes have dens, birds have nests. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." How do we take that? Homelessness is our condition. Foxes don't know any better, nor birds, but humans have evolved a consciousness that is aware of our own death, and we have not quite learned to live with this terror. We delude ourselves with promises of permanence, some kind of forever, some mark, some legacy, some conquest, some name for ourselves, some blessing. But the writer of Ecclesiastes knew that all is vapor. There is no trace. And the challenge for the human being is this: can you know that and survive? Can you know that all of it is impermanent? That, in the words of the philosopher Don Cupid, our lives burn out like the sun? Can we know that and not go insane? I want to find those people to be my guides. I want to learn from those who've been able to live with radical impermanence. Those who live with an awareness of radical impermanence, who live without illusions of permanence, are able to deconstruct all of the illusions of the learned self, to quote Brenda Schaefer, our call to worship. Can you imagine constructing a society without an illusion of exceptionalism? What kind of world might we make that knows in the making of it that it is as temporary as a sandcastle on the beach? The Buddhists do a beautiful thing, a beautiful exercise. They make these wonderful mandalas out of sand, spending time, hours and hours and hours creating these incredible pieces of artwork. And then, whoosh, sand. Everybody wants to take a picture, freeze it, turn it into concrete, put it on a wall, name it, do something. But no, it's part of recognizing that we are dust, and to dust we shall return. And that is the reality. Awareness, say the wise ones, of our impermanence is liberating. I'm going to take that on faith because I'm far from living it. I have many illusions and delusions. But I have also experienced, and I know you have too, that when I'm able to dismantle them, that I grow, that I awaken a little bit. And I like the teachers from whom I have learned, who have torn down the idols of illusion. But let's go back to Abram. The voice tells him to uproot, to be homeless, to be a wandering Aramean. And that's the summons. to embrace impermanence, to be a wanderer. And so where is this land that Yahweh will show him? Well, that's the challenge of reading this old book. I no longer can think that the promised land has a longitude or a latitude. I no longer think the promised land is a heavenly castle or a Marxist utopia. The land, I think, is within. The promised land, the home, is living in this present moment with the world as it is, burning out like the sun with radical emptiness and love. The home is the road. The early Christians called their new philosophy the way. They wanted to be people of the way. The destination is the deeper self. It's a self that burns itself out in loving connection with others. It does not need to define itself as something different from another in order to claim advantage. Several of us watched a film yesterday at Cinema 21 in northwest Portland. The film is called I Am Not Your Negro, words of an unfinished book by James Baldwin. And he ended it with this haunting question to white people. He said, I'm not a Negro, I'm a man. But why is it that white people need me to be a Negro? Why is it that we define ourselves in different ways? And I was thinking about that as I was thinking about this story of Abram and the story of conquest and the story of exceptionalism and the story. And the only way to make that work is to have Abram and other people, ourselves and others, to be over against. But what if we didn't do that? What if we decided to build a world that was not based on illusions of permanence or exceptionalism or fantasies of being great? What if we built a world that needed not to cling to an illusion of permanence, but embrace the reality that this is what is, and one day it will be no more? Now live. The Buddhist takes a glass and holds it up and says, see how beautiful this glass is? I can put water in it and it's clear, and I drink it and it quenches my thirst. One day this glass will be shattered into a million pieces. That's impermanence. That's reality. But in the meantime, you enjoy the glass, my friends. What if we built a world that had no illusions of being completed? The only way I can read the story of Abram with any conscience is to read it in such a way that the land which Yahweh shows him is no land at all, but a way of living in the land that we all share as common nomads. Perhaps then we can all be a blessing to each other.